There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1061, September 18th, 2024, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say, the dingo bites in Baku. Max has the bark, but no bite. We have Monaco Grand Prix winner in the house. There is divine entry in WEC and Schumacher on podium. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Piastri responds to the second banana question. Checo's father found passed out on the ground after Perez crashes in Baku. Leclerc should be proud of his drive in Azerbaijan. And Max seems to be completely losing interest. And this week's interview, we've got Riccardo Patrese from Imola Direct. Of course, with Nasser Hamid. And I do need to remind everybody that yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, how are you doing?
How is the Duke of Dijon doing in Francia?
The Duke of Dijon is doing very well. Of course, I've crisscrossed France visiting my sister in the center, my sister-in-law in the north, and my brother who lives in Aix-en-Provence, down in the south of France. And of course, after that, we went back Charente-Maritime to catch the cars going to Angoulême for the Circuit des Remparts, celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Type 35 Bugatti. So, very exciting indeed.
I am still chillaxing in Frederick, MD, and returning to Tampa FLA on Sunday. And it's getting a little doomy, gloomy weather in MD because we are heading towards October. So I am looking forward to the Florida sunshine and maybe the humidity, but that's another story. Where is Mr. Clark today, and where have you been in your Shangri-La lately?
Well, I'm out in the country. Over in Juignac is where I hang out at my friend's house, and it's just absolutely lovely. The only thing you have to worry about is the tractors that come down the street occasionally. It's very much in the farmland kind of place, rolling hills. It's gorgeous. But I'm off to the airport. The party is over, Nasser. We need to get back to work and need to get this weekly podcast back to weekly as soon as possible. So that'll be happening in the next couple of weeks as we both return to normal. Gracias.
The racing masses took to the streets in Baku. Alex Brundle described the circuit best. Half Monaco, half Monza. Formula One first came to the land of fire, as they call Azerbaijan, in 2017. And in the inaugural race in Baku, the winner was Honey Badger, everybody's favorite, the ever-smiling assassin. Surprisingly, coming into this year's race, the only two-time winner in Baku was Omri, who is having a difficult time winning one race this season, Checo Perez. Red Bull and Mercedes were the only teams to win races in Baku. Then came the Aussie Torpedo on Sunday. Last four races in Baku had the same team and same driver on pole position. So Scuderia had to win after prancing to a victory, to a very impressive victory on home soil, Parco Monza. Or so they thought. But first, let's gallop through the collie. Shocker of Q1 was Lando Norris out in Q1. Miscommunication or whatever you call it, he paid the price. In Q2, Ollie Bearman almost made it to Q3. He was still faster than teammate Nico Hülkenberg. Charles Leclerc was fastest at the end of Q1. Shocker of Q2 was Colapinto, a positive shocker I should say, in 6th ahead of teammate Alexander Albon in 10th. Both Williams in Q3 for the first time this season. Good evening, Mr. Logan Sargeant. As proudly reported in the Argentine media, Colapinto is the first driver from his country to qualify in the top 10 for a Formula One race in 42 years. The last person to do so was Carlos Reutemann when he qualified 6th in the 1982 Brazilian Grand Prix, which turned out to be his final Formula One race because he walked away from Formula One. Machismo was 5th and his teammate, soon to be world champion in an Adrian Newey designed car, was only 10 places down in 15. So Pedro de la Rosa was right. Lance is waiting to unleash his immense talent. I can't wait. Max was the fastest in Q2, so the Red Bull was still breathing and steaming. And now we come to final qualifying stint, Q3. George Russell was the first driver out. He, Max, Leclerc and Piastri all topped the timing sheet in the early stages of Q3. With 5 minutes remaining, it was a red front row with Leclerc and Sainz, followed by Piastri, Russell, Perez, Max, LCH, Albon, Colapinto, and Machismo. Bizarre situation on Albon's car. In a rush to get the car out on the track, a cooling fan was left on the car. If it was removed by the marshals, he would have been disqualified for receiving outside assistance. Throwing the cooling fan from the car was much easier for Albon than pulling the car back into the pits, like Montoya many moons ago. Shocker of Q3 was Perez, out-qualifying Max for the first time this season. This movie by the Verstappen Orange Army is rated NA, not acceptable. Out front on the front row, it was Prancing Horse versus Papaya, Leclerc taking pole position, number 26 of his career, with Piastri second. Carlito qualified third, so it was looking very good for Ferrari. GR finished 5th ahead of LCH in 7th. Colapinto in 9th was ahead of his teammate Albon in 10th. Let's hope they are no longer crying for Argentina, for an Argentine driver, I should say, in Formula One. Seats are limited in 2025, so the message to Colapinto is, andale, andale in the remaining races. Your thoughts on qualifying, senor?
Well, Leclerc is obviously the king of this extremely fast track. I love this track. Average speed, 132 miles per hour, which is amazing. And Leclerc is fast, and it shows that the Ferrari is a competitive car. Lewis Hamilton should be happy watching this. But really, for me, the guy is Piastri. Knowing that his teammate was down, put it on the front row, and it was exciting. Max and Red Bull, you know, Perez out qualifying Max. Max is not interested. When he's not dominating, he's thinking about Kelly Piquet. Anyway, interesting qualifying. And of course, Lewis Hamilton starting in the pits because he had to take a new moteur. Interesting, but what a fast track. I love this track and you just felt it. But and Leclerc is impressive. You got to give it to Leclerc. He's really cut out all the mistakes he used to make early on in his career.
Now we come to the race. Baku has provided some bizarre moments over the years, like Lance Stroll taking his first podium in Formula One. running of the bulls into each other, which left the honey badger with a sour taste about the team's infatuation with their love child. And that famous photo of Max kicking the Pirelli tire after it done blowed up when he had a big lead in the race. So this year, all eyes and hopes were riding on Charles Leclerc. He was starting from his fourth consecutive pole position in Baku, plus he was coming from a high of winning in Parco Monza. He made a good clean start and was out of the DRS zone of Piastri shortly after the start of the race. By lap 10 of 51, Leclerc was almost 3 seconds ahead of Aussie mate. Perez was third ahead of the second Ferrari of Carlito. Max was fifth and not making any inroads into Sainz Jr. I guess that is the sign of the times and state of the Red Bull package these days. Lewis and Ocon started from the pit lane. After a dozen laps, LCH was in 13th. Up front, Leclerc had a lead of almost 5 seconds over Piastri. So it was looking pretty good for two in a row for Scuderia Ferrari. Lap 13, Max came in for tire change after complaining, "I have no bite," and came out 10th. From the "Why am I not surprised" folder, we have Yuki Tsunoda as the first DNF of the race. He suffered collateral damage on the opening lap from Lance Stroll. Make that another item from the "Why am I not surprised" folder. Race leader Leclerc comes into the pits on lap 17, which puts his teammate Carlito in the lead. Leclerc and Piastri back in top two after Carlito comes for fresh rubber on the following lap. On lap 20, Piastri was within DRS zone of Leclerc, and going into turn 1, he says, "Have a fair dinkum die" to the Ferrari driver. This race was coming alive as Checo was within the DRS zone of Leclerc. Among other heavy hitters, Max was 7th and Alonso 9th. Hamilton was 15th and putting pressure on fellow Brit Oli Bearman in a Haas. How things have changed for once mighty Silver Arrows. Apart from Bearman, honorable mention must also be made of Colapinto. He was hanging in there pretty cool in 10th. As they say, Mr. Rogers, to win, to finish first, you first have to finish. And I think on that count, both Bearman and Colapinto are doing very good in the early phases of their Formula One career. But I have a question for you, sir. As you are sipping pastis in Provence, if Mick Schumacher or Logan Sargeant were in this race, do you think they would have seen the checkered flag or gone into the wall of voodoo? What say you?
It's funny because I was thinking of the exact same thing and those poor Williams mechanics. And I believe in the end, Vowles, whatever you call them, probably told the mechanics to vote for a new driver. Because, yeah, I mean, Mick Schumacher would have been another Logan Sargeant. Not only that, but the sacking of Logan Sargeant has picked up this team. All of a sudden, everybody has now turned the page and are performing at a really high level. I mean, they're in Q3. That is pretty effing awesome. And the mechanics at a regular day, not working overtime. So, yes, I think this is awesome, and it's good to see Williams back in the saddle again.
Lap 24, nice ties between Norris and Max for 6th, with Max complaining of brake issues. Lap 30, top 3 in close combat, but Leclerc unable to pass Piastri, even with the assistance of DRS. It was good to see Albon in top 5 ahead of Norris and Max, but both Albon and Norris had to stop for tires. Lap 32, Albon in the pits for tire change. While Piastri and Leclerc were having a good dogfight with Checo right behind them, a 7-time world champion, aka LCH, was having a dog day afternoon, languishing in 13th behind Bearman. While another 7-time world champion in the making was wondering, where have all the flowers and lead of 10 seconds after 10 laps gone, as he was passed for 6 by GR, George Russell. Not sure if you remember ads on telly from days gone by, but back in the day, Miss Kelly LeBrock used to call brute the essence of man. What we had on Sunday was the real essence of man, the best of motor racing. It was so fantastic to see three different teams in the top three with three drivers from three different continents. That is what I call a global motorsport series, duking it out, and as it should be, the best man won the race. F1 Weekly's Lincoln Savings Million Dollar CD Award goes to top dingo of the day, and that was Oscar Piastri. Mr. Norris, you may be in McLaren team of 2007 next season. Here is a public service message. No charge to calling or listening party. Teammate in rearview mirror, maybe closer or even ahead, by the time we reach Albert Park next season. I am looking forward to some serious kangaroo cage rattling. What say you, Mr. Rogers, on McLaren victory?
It was impressive, and the fun part of seeing, after putting the pressure on Piastri to support Norris, of course, which everybody was watching as we came into this Grand Prix, that Piastri, his manager is Mark Webber. Mark Webber knows the 1-2 situation better than anybody, and that's why he's not a world champion. But Piastri is not here to be number two, and the best way to keep everybody at bay and leave him alone with the second banana question is, of course, to beat Norris. Because there tends to be this thing about Norris being a peacemaker, not a pirate, as they said on television. But there's a lot of truth to that. And Piastri, to me, looks like more of a pirate from the get-go. So it's going to get intense. We're going into a new phase, and I'm loving it. It was very impressive. Not only that, but Piastri's car control on that pass on Leclerc was phenomenal for a young driver. Both of them. The car control was unbelievable throughout the entire race. No lockups. No stupidity. I mean, they were so close to the wall. This was great, driver. This was the essence of brute. And because of that, Nasser, I have now purchased a brand new bottle on eBay of brute from 1977.
Now we come to Charles Leclerc. Four straight pole positions in Baku, but no Grand Prix win. I guess we can call him Scott Norwood of Azerbaijan. He was able to outfox Piastri at Monza, but in Baku, Oscar ran like an energizer bunny. Were you surprised Leclerc lost out despite starting from pole position?
Well, he's been on pole in the past so many times without winning. It was sort of a big surprise because we really thought they were on a roll. They're competitive, but it's the curse of the Bambino of Monaco. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough one. He's going to have to get this monkey off his back eventually. It's a little bit bizarre, but Fred Vasseur will find a solution.
And now a few words about George Russell, third podium of the season for Mercedes numero uno, including his only victory of the season so far in Austria. And let's not forget, he did a great job and won in Belgium, but then stewards had other ideas. Checo, he was KO when fighting for third step of the podium. No bueno, as it was one of the few times he was ahead of his teammate. Who was to blame for the crash? I do not know, but we all know how trigger-happy these stewards are. Since they have not given a 75-place grid penalty to Carlito or Checo, I guess we have to put it down to a racing incident. And sir, this came in late news today that Checo's parent, Papito, he suffered some sort of what they are calling a pre-heart attack situation after watching the Azerbaijan Grand Prix and was rushed to hospital. So we would like to wish him all the best, very speedy recovery, and I hope he is doing all right. Now we move on to the almighty Max. What have they done to the rain? the reign of Red Bull and Max that delivered 7 wins from the first 10 races. I have seen such meltdown from one season to another. Lotus had a world championship winning car for Mario Andretti in 1978, but in 1979, both Mario and his teammate Carlos Reutemann were unable to win a race. World champion that season in 1979 was Jody Scheckter. The following year, he was nowhere to be seen near any of the podiums. In fact, he only scored 2 points throughout the season as a defending world champion driving for Ferrari. But apart from the Braun Grand Prix situation in 2009, this is the biggest collapse of a high-performance team during the season that I can remember in a long time. Max has now gone 7 races without a win, very hard to believe after his super uber domination last season. Just in one season, he won more races than most successful drivers do in their career. Next race is this weekend in Singapore. I think it will be another knights in white satin for Red Bull. Now we come to the young one, Ollie Bearman. His Formula 2 season has not been bullish, but scoring points in your first 2 Formula 1 races for 2 different teams is very impressive. In Baku, he drove K-Mag's Haas, and in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, he was riding Carlito's Prancing Horse, as the Spanish driver had a little tummy issue. Next season, Bearman is full-time at Haas as teammate to Esteban Ocon. Time will tell if Ocon will do a foie gras on Ollie or Bearman will do a bangers and mash on Ocon. I think there will be a casualty at Haas next season. And you know what is really impressive about Bearman? He took part under tremendous pressure in 2 races, both street races and both of very fast street races, Baku and Saudi Arabia, Jeddah. And to get in the points, not crumble under pressure, I think it's very, very impressive. I think his mom should go up to the team principals at both teams and thank them, if you know what I mean. Okay, sir, now we are going to talk about Nico Hülkenberg. He set a new track record. Not sure if he wants it, but he has it. The driver with the most finishes in the same position just outside the points. He was 11th in Baku, his 7th finish in this position this season. Mr. Rogers, before you give your thoughts on the race, I have a question. Will it surprise you if Max and Red Bull do not win a race rest of the season?
No, not really, because that thought has already crossed my mind. The way Max is getting more and more frustrated. Who knows what Perez is doing? Obviously, he's fast on some circuits. And the Red Bull seems to respond to him fairly well. He kept up with Piastri and Leclerc. But you notice that Max was just not interested. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to win any more races. I think it's over. They're going to lose the constructors. Max might squeeze by with staying in the top 5 for the rest of the season. But it's going to be a strange off-season at Red Bull.
And your thoughts on the race. And por favor, feel free to bring Machismo into the conversation. Lately, he has been a missing person, probably walking in Oviedo.
The race was great. I mean, it was a great race. Too bad Perez gave his father a heart attack, but it's a shame for Red Bull. Now we know McLaren may win the Constructors' Championship the first time in 26 years, so things are changing. On the other hand, Fernando is not forgotten. We have Adrian Newey on the team. They're spending money. He is teaching Lance to become world champion. It'll be interesting to see what 2026 looks like because, you know, Fernando, with Flavio hanging out all the time now, it's very possible that he could be there in 2027 to reap the fruit of Mr. Newey's labor.
This Sunday, we will have Singapore Airlines Singapore Grand Prix. With no wins by Max in the last 7 races, I hate to say this, but I think the trend will continue in Marina Bay Circuit. McLaren are now the favorites and the fastest. Since Max's last victory in June in Barcelona, Spanish Grand Prix of course, McLaren and Mercedes have won 3 races each, and Ferrari won at Monza. Finally, we come to Zinger of the Day, sponsored in full by Clorox. Are you expecting any surprises in Singapore? Like the walls closing in on McLaren and Mercedes, and out of nowhere, Aston Martin wins the Grand Prix with car number 14. Who could that be?
Well, Nasser, Fernando has nothing to do with that. He was just there doing an outstanding job, of course. Briatore has paid his dues. So why can't we just be more loving and wonderful people? So no. Nothing of that kind is going to happen. But Aston Martin should hopefully pick up the pace a little bit towards the end of the season, being completely motivated now with Adrian Newey coming on board. And on that note, why don't we take a quick break? And we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Enzo Fittipaldi, and you guys are listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And now we go into Motorsports Mondial and interview of the day. For that, we go to Imola. 2 weeks ago, I was there and had the opportunity to meet and have a chat with one of my very favorite racing driver from the mid to late 70s, and I followed his career with a lot of interest, Signor Riccardo Patrese. He comes from Padova, northern Italy, which is also known as Padua for English-speaking folks. I also met his son Lorenzo. He is racing in the Italian GT Championship and a nice young kid, you know. So hopefully in the next trip to Europa, I will do an interview with Lorenzo also. So let's listen to a gentleman who was teammate to Michael Schumacher and Nigel Mansell and had a wonderful long career in Formula One for many years. My thanks to Riccardo for his time, and hopefully F1 Weekly Familia members enjoy this conversation. The conversation starts with him talking about his son.
Mainly he's doing the Fanatec GT World Challenge, where he's competing very well. He won already in the Gold Class 3 races, so he's very young, but fortunately he's working well, and he's growing up his maturity very well, and I hope that one day he can be a professional driver of that category.
Okay. In the last 57 years, you are one of only 2 Italian drivers to have won a Formula One race on home soil. Do you remember the feelings you had on the last lap of the 1990 San Marino Grand Prix and on the podium?
Well, that was very fine, very good, because also it was a long time that I didn't win a Grand Prix. Also here in Imola was a special taste, because in 1983 I lost the Grand Prix in Acqua Minerali. So at the end, to be able to win in this Grand Prix that I consider my own Grand Prix was very nice.
As a young boy, you were good in several sports. What got you hooked up in racing? Was there any interest in the family in motorsport?
Especially in the family, and this is because I came close to motorsport, because my mind when I was a child, there was not the idea to be a racing driver, but maybe probably very competitive in all the activities I was doing, that's for sure. But the fact that they were talking about motor racing probably gave me the passion, then I went on for my career.
Now, did you push Lorenzo to go into racing, or did he push you to put him in racing?
He pushed me to put him in racing, really. When he asked, I said no. Okay, then I said, okay, try a little bit of karting, but I was sure that he couldn't manage, because he started very late, 11, that his colleagues, they were already doing karting since they were 7 years old. So because of that, I thought that he had a lot of problems, but really he went up very quickly. And I have to say that one day I couldn't say anymore, no, you cannot do this, because the results, they were good. So it was, I couldn't say no anymore. So he went on, and I have to say that we chose the GT and maybe one day the prototypes career, because it's a more concrete possibility to be a professional driver. To dream to go to Formula One now is very, very difficult, and it looks like a travel to go to Mars.
Exactly. Okay, Estoril 1974, you won the Karting World Championship over Eddie Cheever and Francois Goldstein. Can you tell us about how important this victory was for you so early in your career?
Well, it's still one of my really preferred victory. The World Championship of 74 is something that is in my mind. It was a fantastic memory. And it was very important because he opened the door to go to Formula Italia, and then Formula 3 the year after, and I found myself very quickly in Formula 1. And I think the push for all this
success
was the winning Estoril of the 74 championship.
This I find very interesting. You learned the full Nürburgring circuit by walking the Nordschleife. How long it took to do that?
8 hours and a half. Yeah, it was a long track walk.
Why did you walk and not drive?
Because we couldn't drive, because the circuit was closed. So instead of to do nothing that day, we decided to have a little bit of walking, but not all the track. Suddenly we found ourselves maybe far away from the start. So we said, keep going. At the end, we were on the opposite side. At the end, we had to finish the lap. And so I managed eight hours and a half track. And the worst part was the last section, that is 4 kilometers, 5 kilometers straight. Nothing really to see, but just to work to finish the day. And it was really a bit boring. But anyway, it was clear that after a very short time, I could go quick in the circuit, and I knew the layout very well.
Great. And this helped you to win the Formula 3 championships. What were the highs and lows of the season that you remember now?
Formula 3 was very high because we won the championship. It was a very hard championship to win because I was a rookie. We had Conny Anderson, that was really a tough competitor, the Swedish. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a Grand Prix lottery in Monza. Monza was really an important win, I think, of that championship. So at the end, that is, I think, the win most important and most, let's say, that I remember with most pleasure.
Okay. You won the Macau Grand Prix 2 years in a row. Your impression of that race and track, and how does that track compare to, let's say, Monte Carlo?
It's more complicated than Monte Carlo, I think, Macau, because it is much more narrow in the top part. There is a very tight hairpin. Very quick section. I think the pleasure to win Macau Grand Prix twice in a row, I think it was fantastic, and I remember really with a lot of fun with my team manager Paul Owens, and also the owner of the team, Bob Harper. We had a fantastic time together, and it was very nice for him to win that Grand Prix, because he was fighting always against Eddie Hipp. That was the And in the first one in 77, I was racing for Bob Harper, and for Ted Heap, Alan Jones was there, that we were teammates in Shadow. So there was a lot of rivalry, but nice atmosphere, definitely.
There was a lot of courtroom drama at Shadows after Jackie Oliver started Arrows. Were you aware of relationship going downhill between Don Nichols and Jackie Oliver?
Not much. I just arrived there. I knew that they were doing a new car, a new team for 76, but I didn't know all the aggravation between them.
Now, Don Nichols was quite a character. How did you find him?
Fantastic. He was a fantastic character and very friendly. Thanks him that I could arrive in Formula One, because since then I stayed for 17 years.
You know, this race I remember very well. You leading the South African Grand Prix in the Arrows F1 car. That had to be, you were young, I was young too. It had to be a great feeling, and then the car broke down. Did you cry?
No, I didn't cry, but I was quite upset, but in a way also not shouting much, hoping that maybe I could have another chance. Unfortunately, I had to wait till Monaco 82 to win a Grand Prix, but you know, you never know, because the car was very competitive, but at the end it's better to win when you have the occasion, not to wait for another one.
Now, another race I remember very well, Anderstorp 1978 Swedish Grand Prix. I remember reading about the race that Ronnie Peterson did not want to shake your hands, and he was quoted as saying, you do this in Formula 2, not F1, because your car was very white. Did Ronnie say anything to you after the race?
No, Ronnie shaked my hand. He didn't say anything. He was, of course, upset a little bit because he lost a second place and maybe my car was very white. But he was quite fair. He didn't say much. I think the other drivers that were doing all the polemics, Niki Lauda, James Hunt, and then, okay, Watkins Glen, it was also Mario Andretti, Jody Scheckter, and Fittipaldi. But Ronnie was the most calm one of the drivers in that period.
Yeah, I remember the situation at Watkins Glen very well. Your first victory, like you said, Monaco 1982, came in bizarre circumstances. You did not even know you had won the race. What went through your mind after you spun your Brabham?
I spun, and of course I didn't know that I won the Grand Prix, and it was a surprise when I came to the podium of the Prince Ranieri. And I have to say that it's not that I robbed anybody, because I was second to Alan Prost that crashed, so I was very competitive that weekend, so at the end I won the Grand Prix, even if there was a lot of lottery at the end, so it was nice.
Okay. On the cool-down lap, you gave a ride to another driver who should have won the race. You have to go?
Yes, there is the race, sorry, but in 3 minutes the race is starting. Okay. And you said 10 minutes.
It's 9 minutes. Okay. One last.
If you start like this and you go to 1993, we finish tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. On the cool-down lap, you gave a ride to another driver who should have won the race. Can you tell us why Didio Pironi was banging on your helmet?
Because I forgot that I had on my side pods and I was going too quick, so he was not very happy about the feeling I was providing to him.
Ricardo, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
We have more in the Baku goodie bag. Formula 2 action. The season is winding down. Saturday, we had the sprint race. Mark Knopfler had a song called Postcard from Paraguay. Formula 2 now has a winner from that Latin nation. The name is Joshua Dirksen. I met this happy chappy at Imola, where he had taken his first podium in Formula 2. American Jack Crawford was second for Dams, and this team was started by Jean-Paul Driot, the D is for him, and one of our favorites, René Arnoux, the A is for him. But today the team is owned by ex-GP2 and F1 racer Charles Peak. Actually, the team is known as Dams Lucas Team, and Lucas Oil is, of course, a US-based company getting involved in motor racing very actively, and they also have a pretty nice racing school where Mr. Montoya's younger brother, Federico, is one of the instructors. Impressive Formula 2 debut for Sicilian Gabriele Mini. He is managed by Nicola Todd and finished on the podium in third. He lost the F3 championship on the last corner of the last lap at Monza a few weeks ago. Moa was there to witness this incredible torpedo from his paisan, Leonardo Fornaroli, who took the title without a single race win. Now we come to the feature race, the main show for Formula 2. Dutch treat as Richard for sure wins on Sunday. He drives for Italian Trident team. The owner is a gentleman involved in music business by the name of Maurizio Salvadori. Last weekend, his son Luca was involved in a fatal crash during a motorcycle race in Germany. He was 32 years old. Our condolences to Luca's family and friend. And in a nice gesture, a team in Italian championship has withdrawn its entry so the late Luca can be crowned as champion. So that's very decent of them. Brazilian Gabriel Bortoleto is the new championship leader, and he's a rookie in the series. He's leading with 169.5 points. Isaac Hadjar is second on 165 points. Bortoleto is a McLaren junior. Hadjar is a Red Bull junior. Next round is with the Qatar Grand Prix at Lusail Circuit. Next, we have Info on Red Bull promotion. Teenager from UK, we interviewed him last year. Arvid Lindblad, who raced in Formula 3 this season, will move into Formula 2 in 2025 with Spanish team Campos, which was of course started by the late Adrian Campos, and his son now runs the show. So Lindblad will be in Formula 2 in his third year of single-seater racing. This is how you travel on the Red Bull Express Gravy train. This train does not make many stops before it reaches its final destination, platform F1. But it is very well designed and capable of jettisoning unwanted or slow and heavy baggage while moving very fast. All aboard who think they are fast. Conductor extraordinaire Dr. Helmut Marko, who has a degree in jurisprudence, will make the final decision. He is the judge, jury, and the executioner, and very efficient with that. Now we go to the other side of the world, Nihon, World Endurance Championship from Fuji Circuit. The Fuji Circuit is owned by Toyota. The best they could do in the race was 10th with Buemi, Hartley, and local yokel Ryo Hirakawa. The race was won by a Penske crew of Kevin Estre, Andre Lotterer, and Lawrence Van Thur. BMW drivers Rafael Marcello, Marco Wittmann, and Dries Van Thur were second, and Mick Schumacher was third for Alpine, driving with Nicolas Lapierre and Matthew Vaxibier. The fastest lap was recorded by Toyota driver Kamui Kobayashi. Who can forget his feisty debut for Toyota in Formula 1 at Interlagos? Among the names here, Rafael Marcello was on his way to F1 as part of Ferrari Driver Academy. He is an Italian-speaking Swiss, just like Binotto, and when he joined Ferrari Driver Academy, he quickly became Italian, just like Romain Grosjean became a French driver, starting out as a Swiss driver. So after winning F3 championship, Marcello ran out of steam in Formula 2, and Ferrari very quickly said ciao ciao after treating him to some pistachio gelato, which is very good in Italy, by the way. Now, a few years ago, Marcello was with Mercedes in the GT3 program, and I met him at Daytona. Very nice and polite young man. I asked him if he can do an interview, and he said, I have to get approval from the Mercedes people. So I asked him, who should I talk to here at Daytona? He said he will have to contact Mercedes PR department in Europe. Okay, now it gets even better. A few years prior to this, when he was in the Ferrari Junior program as a teenager, he was kind enough to chat with me on Facebook. But for the interview, he said, I have to get approval from Ferrari. So welcome to the new world of controlled environment. That's just the way it is these days. You have to submit questions and they can have the power to say don't ask this question if the word Formula One is used in the question. So, we work with what we have. Next, Hyundai coming to World Endurance Championship, also known as WEC. The South Korean manufacturer is now one of the largest automakers in the world. Their motorsports manager with F1 experience was hired on a strong recommendation from Christian Horner. His name is Cyril Abitbol and their European base is in Germany. Hyundai will be doing a reno, entering the series under their luxury brand Genesis, which so far has not rattled the cage of Lexus or BMW, at least in the US marketplace. This is great news for WEC as they already have Ferrari, Porsche, Peugeot, Toyota, and Alpine. But not so good news for IndyCar Racing, who are desperately seeking a third manufacturer, especially under constant rumors of Honda may bail out and go Lynas Car. Next, IndyCar Racing. Final race of the season took place in Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. This used to be a street race, but with the new football stadium being built, it took place on an oval in Lebanon, Tennessee. And the promoter of this race is Scott Porchetta, who is also a racer and founder of this Spike water cooler or whatever it is. But he has done a good job and he races in the Trans Am series also. And at one time he discovered Taylor Swift, but she had other ideas. Now, this was first oval win for young American talent Colton Herta. Back in the day, he was racing against Lando Norris in what is today Formula 4, British Formula 4, I should say. Survey says Colton won 3 races and Lando Norris won 8 races, and with it, the championship. Taking his 3rd championship in IndyCar racing was young Spaniard and what I would call the new muy macho hombre de España, at least on this side of the pond, Señor Alex Palou. The season is still on for the lawsuit against him from McLaren, but both parties have now agreed to settle the issue through arbitration. Solution is very simple. Show me the money, a few million dollars, and case will be settled. So we'll see what happens. Now we move on to the Formula 2 of American Open Wheel Racing, Indy Next. Some call it Indy NXT. We have an IndyCar star in the making here. Now, we've been following his career for a few years and we have interviewed him a few times. And the 2024 champion Louis Foster ended the season on a very high note by winning his 8th race of the season. Foster is from UK and more than just okay when it comes to motor racing talent. He and Palou were smart enough to cross the pond instead of spending millions and millions of dollars in Formula 2 and chasing the F1 rainbow. Looking forward to the Singapore Grand Prix, I think Charles Leclerc and a Ferrari will be on pole and the race winner will come from McLaren team. What say you, amigo?
Yeah, Singapore is going to be great. It's going to be, we'll see, the weather's always cooperated so far, but it's a night race, street race. Fernando does well, Max does well, Perez does well, but of course all eyes are on Leclerc and whether Piastri can keep it up and whether Norris can bounce back. So there's a lot of things happening here, of course, and our new boys, Behrman and Colapinto, they have to continue their machismo-ness within their respective teams. So, oh my God, there's so much racing and it's so much fun. So I am dearly looking forward to another Singapore Grand Prix.
Okay, folks, finally we come to Musical Mondial. As we all know and see, times are not so glorious and imperious for two living and racing legends of Formula One. So we invite little Anthony and the Imperials for a little musical entertainment. Thank you for listening. Till we meet again behind palatial walls. Ta-ta! Well, let me tell you. She's in love, don't stand in her way.